And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, August 18th. I want to suggest you have a pencil and paper handy because you might want to take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, any kind of contact information you might need to get information and take action. Let's start with news from the Earth First Newswire. An activist locked down to barrels and halted logging in the Klamath. Early on the morning of August 5th, logging operations were halted on the West Side post-fire logging project after a daring activist chained himself between two 55-gallon drums filled with concrete at a gate leading to the project area. The nonviolent direct action protest was the latest in campaign events triggered by continued logging despite a pending lawsuit. The group announced plans for a public rally at the same location on August 13th. Didn't hear any news about that. Logging companies are profiting from the deforestation of public lands in the Karuk tribe's Aboriginal territory of the Klamath National Forest. The massive post-fire logging project is in the heart of the Klamath Siskiyou bioregion and includes clear cuts on unstable slopes above endangered salmon-bearing waterways. Quote, the Forest Service has given people no other choice than to take matters into our own hands to stop the logging, said Misty, a 28-year-old resident of eastern Humboldt County. I will sit here until the Karuk plan is implemented. I'm not moving until then. I support Karuk management, and that can restore balance with fire in these forests. The Karuk tribe, which has managed their ancestral land since time immemorial, had proposed the Karuk alternative, which would have provided marketable timber with a focus on strategic ridgetop fuel breaks and roadside hazard treatments to ensure that communities are protected and that future fire events, including cultural burns, are controllable. The West Side project includes logging of old-growth habitat and a take permit for 102 northern spotted owls listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. It also adversely affects numerous other species, including the nationally significant Caroline Creek Bald Eagle Nest, which has served as a seed population for the entire region. The project proposes to replace this prime snag forest habitat with plantations. Denuding a region after a wildfire is the worst action you can take when it comes to salmon restoration, said local fisheries expert Nathaniel Pennington. Large woody debris is created by fires are exactly what salmon need. The West Side Project sells this valuable material for pennies on the dollar while destabilizing slopes and contributing to the sediment problems that our salmon already face. Last summer, debris flows within the footprint of the project clogged salmon spawning beds with arguably some of the best habitats left in the Klamath Basin. It's time for the Klamath National Forest to stop prioritizing timber sales and get on board with Klamath River restoration, an effort we many believe to be the biggest river restoration project in world history, Pennington continued. On March 3, 2015, the Karuk Tribe, Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, Klamath Riverkeeper, Center for Biologic Diversity, and the Environmental Protection Information Center filed a lawsuit in federal court challenging the West Side Project, alleging that the plan illegally increased the risk of extinction for threatened populations of coho salmon. Although the lawsuit has been filed, logging has commenced, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is not expected to make a decision on the case until later this year. And the Mount Polly blockade, a land defender, has been injured by Imperial Metals employee in this story by Brenda Norell of Censored News, as found on the Earth First Newswire. On August 4th, the Sesquipemec Women's Warrior Societies and allies, including Ancestral Pride, gathered in front of the Imperial Metals Mount Polly mine to mark the second-year anniversary of British Columbia's largest catastrophic industrial disaster devastating one of the world's most fragile ecosystems, home to the world's second-largest sockeye salmon run. Allied land defenders, including youth elders and women, temporarily blockaded the mine site for the day, allowing workers to leave but not to re-enter. In this process, an Imperial Metals employee attempted to violently breach the line of elders, women, and children at the mine entrance with their vehicle. Sachin of Ancestral Pride, in an attempt to stop the vehicle, was herself assaulted and sustained serious injuries and was immediately taken to hospital for treatment. She has since been released and will be filing a report against the driver of the vehicle and is seeking further legal guidance. On August 4, 2014, the largest industrial disaster was unleashed through Sequoia-Pemec waters and into unceded and unsurrendered Sequoia-Pemec lands as Imperial Metals Mount Polly Tailings Dam failed after years of unenforced warnings from the province of the British Columbia regarding the integrity and the capacity of the dam. It spilled 24 million cubic meters of toxic mine waste into the area. First, it should be clearly stated the provincial government has no legal jurisdiction on unceded and unsurrendered territory to be issuing any permits that they have issued to Imperial Metals Mount Polly Mine. Second, Imperial Metals has refused to clean up the toxic tailings left on the land and in the water and has not been held responsible for any of the mass destruction it has caused and continues to cause to and in unceded and unsurrendered Sequoia-Pemec territory. That the province has continued to issue the Mount Polly Mine permits to reopen and operate at full capacity is not only absolutely unacceptable, but criminal. The province's active aiding and abetting of Imperial Metals' large-scale industrial destruction of Sequoia-Pemec lands is a continuation of the genocide against Sequoia-Pemec peoples. These actions have not and will not be tolerated. The Sequoia-Pemec Women's Warrior Society will not be stopped. Imperial Metals Mount Polly Mine will not be allowed to reopen. And a Utah prosecutor has dropped an ag gag charge against vegan activists in this story by Dan Flynn of Food Safety News, as found on the Earth First Newswire. For a second time, Utah prosecutors have dropped charges of agricultural operation interference that police had filed under the state's new law for cloaking agricultural facilities with special legal protection. Prosecutors backed away from pursuing the so-called ag gag part of their criminal case against the four vegan activists from Bethesda, Maryland-based Farm Animal Rights Movement, while Iron County Attorney Scott Garrett dropped charges of agricultural operational interference against the four. He will continue to charge them with simple trespass, which is said to have occurred last September 24th in the vicinity of the hog-raising Circle 4 Farms in southwest Utah. The four, Sarah Jane Gage, 43, of L.A., Robert Penny, 64, of Laguna Beach, California, Harold Weiss, 34, of Pasadena, California, and Brian Monell, 50, of Mount Rainier, Maryland, earlier pleaded not guilty to the county charges. An attorney for the four has said that they were on the side of the roads and not on private property. A spokesman for the sheriff's office said the four were detained for about 2 hours and nothing was taken from them before they were released. Garrett said the more serious agricultural operation interference charges against the four were being dropped at the request of Circle 4 Farms, owned since 2013 by Smithfield Foods Incorporated, the world's largest pork producer and a subsidiary of China's Shanghui Group, known as Shanghui Group in non-English-speaking countries. Utah's first ag gag law arrest occurred on February 8, 2013, when Draper City Police took Salt Lake City resident Amy Meyer into custody. Meyer, an animal welfare activist monitoring a local slaughterhouse, was taking pictures of apparent animal abuse, but was doing so from public property. Charges against Meyer were dropped on April 30, 2013, but only after she obtained private legal counsel and made court appearances. Meyer is not a plaintiff in the federal court challenge to the Utah ag gag case, which is scheduled for trial next year. Meyer and other plaintiffs claim that the purpose of the agricultural operation interference crime is to impair the public debate about animal welfare, food safety, and labor issues on modern industrial farms. In essence, the law criminalizes undercover investigations and videography at slaughterhouses, factory farms, and other agricultural operations, thus gagging speech that is critical of industrial animal agriculture. Further, they say the purpose of Utah's ag gag law is to silence undercover investigations and corresponding media coverage. Utah Circle 4 Farms produces 1.2 million hogs per year and provides employment for about 450 local residents. While not one of the animal welfare groups typically doing undercover investigations that ag gag laws were designed to stop, the farm animal rights movement promotes a vegan diet and animal rights activism. And an arson investigation is underway at the three Bakken pipeline sites. In this story from the Newton Daily News, as found on the Earth First Newswire, equipment fires at three construction sites in Jasper and Mahaska counties, Iowa, on the Dakota Access Pipeline construction route over the weekend are being treated as acts of arson by local law enforcement. The Newton Fire Department and Jasper County Sheriff's deputies responded to the fires at approximately 6 a.m. Monday on a farm field in South 12th Avenue West, about 4.5 miles west of Newton, Iowa. A local resident called 911 to report the blaze. According to Jasper County Sheriff John Halferty, two machines were damaged at the Newton site. One was smoldering and the other was still ablaze when firefighters and deputies arrived on the scene. The damaged pieces of equipment were identified as a bulldozer and a track hoe, perhaps a backhoe. Deputies in Jasper County are also investigating a second fire on Salmon Street, about 2.5 miles southeast of Reasoner. The Newton Daily News confirmed a third report of suspected arson in Mahaska County over the weekend involving equipment on the Dakota Access Pipeline route about 8.5 miles north of Oskaloosa. "We believe it's an obvious intentionally set fire. It wasn't like the equipment overheated," Halferty said at the scene near Newton. As of Monday morning, investigators did not have any suspects in the case. Halferty said the fires could be been set by a single person, but law enforcement is not ruling out the possibility of multiple suspects. Construction began on the crude oil pipeline in Jasper County last week. Halferty said the fires were the first local reports of vandalism related to the project. According to investigators, the combined estimated damage at the Newton and Reasoner construction sites is approximately $1 million. The damage was located on bulldozer and track hose engine and cab compartments. Halferty said the machinery is likely a total loss. The equipment is owned by Houston-based Payben USA, and Precision Pipeline of Eau Claire, Wisconsin is running the Jasper County job sites. A representative from Precision Pipeline declined to comment, but work site superintendents told the Jasper County Sheriff's Department the fires would set the construction aback about one day. Precision has experienced minor cases of vandalism on other project sites, but has never had equipment set on fire in Iowa. Halferty said the state fire marshal and Iowa DCI have also been notified of the incidents. The Jasper County Sheriff's Office and Newton Fire Marshal are leading the investigations near Newton and Reasoner. Law enforcement is working the case on minimal evidence, Halferty said, and the sheriff's office is asking for public's assistance in the case. "We want to rely on the public. If they notice anything, call it in," he said. "We'd encourage them to call in something that may or may not be suspicious. If we don't know about it, it's hard to follow up on." Scott Miller, a deputy at the Mahaska County Sheriff's Office, said Monday four pieces of heavy equipment were found burned on a pipeline route at 175th Street and Kent Avenue between Oskaloosa and New Sharon. Investigators believe that that fire was set early Sunday morning. New Sharon Fire Department was the first to respond to the scene. Miller said the fire happened early Sunday morning. Investigators from Mahaska County Sheriff's Office also had no suspects as of Monday. The $3.8 million, 1,164-mile Dakota Access Pipeline project is under construction in four U.S. states. When completed, it will transport a maximum of 540,000 barrels of crude oil per day from the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota to a hub in Patoka, Illinois. Approximately 343 miles of pipe will be laid underground in 18 Iowa counties. Dakota Access LLC, a subsidiary of Texas-based Energy Transfer Partners, expects to complete the construction and have the pipeline in operation by the end of this year. And Operation Albacore results in detention of a Spanish longliner, in this story from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society of Australia. On the 6th of August, the Spanish longline vessel Alomar Primero was boarded in waters belonging to the Central African island state of Sao Tome and Principe by Sao Tomean authorities, assessed by Sea Shepherd crew and law enforcement officers from Gabon. Although the longliner was licensed to fish for tuna and similar species, inspections revealed that their fish holds were filled with sharks, predominantly blue sharks, that is classified as near threatened by the IUCN. Many of the sharks' fins had already been detached from their bodies, a suspected violation of the European Union finning ban and its amendment, which requires sharks to be landed with their fins naturally attached. Sao Tomean authorities ordered the longliner to retrieve their fishing gear, release their catch, and proceed to Sao Tome for investigation. With four Marines remaining on board for security, the longliner was escorted to Sao Tome by the Sea Shepherd vessel M.Y. Bob Barker. On the 7th of August, the Alame Primero arrived at the fishing village of Neves, where it will remain pending investigations while the motor yacht Bob Barker resumes patrols. Since April 2016, under the name Operation Albacore, Sea Shepherd has been assisting the government of Gaman to tackle illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing by providing the use of the Bob Barker as a civilian offshore patrol vessel operating in Gabonese waters under the direction of the Gabonese government. In August, Sao Tome and Principe partnered with Operation Abalone, Albacore, sending two Marines and one fisheries observer from Sao Tome to join the Sea Shepherd crew, Gabonese Marines and Gabonese fisheries enforcement officers on board the Bob Barker, to further detect and deter IUU fishing in the Gulf of Guinea. And for more information, visit the webpage www.seashepherd.org.au. And from British Columbia, a claim of logging sabotage from It's Going Down as found on the Earth First Newswire. In recent weeks, we wrapped ourselves in twilight and desurveyed a cut block claimed by Island Timberlands on unceded Ka'amox territory between Bain Sound and the Beaufort Peaks. The Raven Coal Plant is dead. Island Timberlands is next. Until all are free, signed some anarchist fairies. And in support of a spike board as a blockade tactic from Warrior Publications, and I want to just add that the ideas expressed in this article are those of the author, Warrior Publications, and not those of the Earth First Update. On August 4, 2016, a land defender was injured during a blockade action at the Mount Polly mine site, as we reported earlier, when a central British Columbia, when a driver, reportedly a worker for Imperial Metals, drove through the blockade. The blockade was comprised of people standing in the roadway to stop traffic. Never a good idea, in my opinion. The fact is, people blockading vehicles will always be dependent upon the driver not forcing their way through, for the simple reason that a group of people cannot physically stop a car or truck. Some blockades will inevitably be comprised of people standing in the path of traffic. As I mentioned, I don't think it's a good tactic, but in some situations I understand why it's used. For example, many protests in urban environments will simply stop at intersections to disrupt traffic. There have also been numerous highway blockades carried out by Black Lives Matter protesters, in which groups of people make their way onto a highway and stop the flow of traffic. These types of temporary blockades may be spontaneous, or the police presence prevents the bringing of blockade materials such as dumpsters and other large objects carried onto the roadway. When a blockade is planned beforehand, however, and/or takes place in an environment in which it is relatively easy to bring obstacles onto a roadway, it is far safer to do so than to try and stop vehicles with one's body. To stop vehicles during a pursuit, police frequently deploy spike belts. These are folding steel devices that can be quickly thrown across a road and have spikes sticking up. If a vehicle drives over the spike belt, the tires are punctured and the mobility of the vehicle is severely reduced. A common tactic used by Indigenous land defenders in British Columbia during the 1990s was a variant of the spike belt, the spike board. It is an inexpensive and easily made device comprising of a board with spikes or large nails hammered through, usually with a rope handle attached. The board is laid across a roadway to stop vehicles from simply driving through a blockade or checkpoint. If a blockade was only targeting certain vehicles, such as logging trucks, it could be easily removed to allow passage of civilian vehicles, or emergency vehicles for that matter. The same applied for information checkpoints, during which all vehicles were stopped and checked and then allowed to proceed or turned away if it was a targeted blockade. The spike board is a very effective technique because if a driver chose to drive, force their way through, the result would be the destruction of their tires. A vehicle can still drive on its rims, of course, but that would result in damage to the rims. So drivers always stopped for the spike board. Another option is to park a vehicle across the road that could then be moved to allow vehicles to pass depending on terrain, something to think about the next time you take part in a blockade action. And from Brazil, the São Luís Dam construction has been blocked in this story from Survival International, as found on the Earth First Newswire. As the Rio Olympics kick off, Brazil has blocked the construction of a controversial dam in the heart of the Amazon rainforest. The São Luís Dam planned for the Tapajós River threatened to flood the Munduruku Indians' forest and force many off their land. The Munduruku, like all indigenous peoples, depend on their land for their survival, but industrialized society is trying to steal it and plunder its resources under the name of progress and civilization. The Munduruku have been firmly opposed to the São Luís Dam and dozens of others planned for the region. The dam's environmental license was shelved this week following the Munduruku's resistance, pressure from public prosecutors and experts on the ground, and reports by Brazil's Indigenous Affairs Department and the Environment Ministry. Alongside their struggle to stop the dams, the Munduruku have embarked on a landmark mission to map out their ancestral territory and protect it from illegal miners and loggers. The Brazilian government had failed to uphold its constitutional duty to do this, leaving the land open to destruction. Munduruku leader Subaranino Sá said, "Our struggle is dangerous, but we know we will win. Tribal peoples are the best conservationists and guardians of the natural world. Together with other tribes across Brazil, the Munduruku are also protesting plans to change the law and drastically weaken indigenous peoples' land rights. One of these plans, known as PEC-215, would give anti-Indian landowners and others a chance to block the recognition of new indigenous territories, and it might even enable them to break up existing ones." Survival's Stop Brazil's Genocide campaign, launched in April 2016 for the run-up of the Olympics, is galvanizing global support for the Indians' resistance against PEC-215, calling for the protection of the land of uncontacted tribes, the most vulnerable people on the planet. And a BLM logging plan guts President Clinton's Northwest Forest legacy in this story from Bird News. The Bureau of Land Management has approved a logging plan for the forests it manages in Oregon, significantly weakening protections for the threatened marbled murrelet and northern spotted owl. These protections were put in place in 1994 as part of President Clinton's Northwest Forest Plan. The BLM plan is a huge step in the wrong direction that ignores science, the dangers of climate change, and the successes of President Clinton's Northwest Forest Plan, said Steve Holmer, senior policy advisor for the American Bird Conservancy. The BLM is now planning to log mature forests that are needed to recover populations of the threatened marbled murrelet and northern spotted owl, and that provide for clear water and carbon storage. American Bird Conservancy submitted a letter to the BLM providing feedback upon the plan. ABC also urged the Obama administration officials to shelve the proposed plan, instead keeping the Northwest Forest Plan in effect until it can be updated in conjunction with the U.S. Forest Service. The marbled murrelet, the species listed under the Endangered Species Act, will be placed at great risk by the BLM's plan to increase logging in mature forests, said Holmer. The Northwest Forest Plan provided for half-mile buffers around nesting territories. These are needed to ensure sufficient protected habitat around nests in a heavily fragmented landscape. This common-sense safeguard is being abandoned at the same time BLM is proposing to ramp up clear-cutting. The marbled murrelet nests on large branches of mature and old-growth trees. It is listed as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act because of habitat laws caused by primarily the logging of old-growth forests. An estimated 19,000 birds remain, but the Washington state population is currently in a steep 5.9% annual decline, and long-term population projections indicate a high risk of extinction in California and Oregon within the next 100 years. The marbled murrelet nests suffer heavier predation in areas where the forest is not intact. Clear-cutting proposed in the BLM plan for Oregon will further fragment the landscape. The current buffers protect a circular area of 503 acres of habitat based on a half-mile radius from the nest site. The new plan provides for only 6.5 acres of protected habitat, a 98% reduction from the current standard. Meanwhile, the northern spotted owl, also listed as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act, is in decline across its range, including in Oregon. A recent study showed that the owl population has decreased by 31 to 68% in Oregon since 1985, due to the dual threats of habitat loss and competition from barred owls. The BLM plans for commercial logging in areas designated as reserves for the owl by the Northwest Forest Plan, in particular late successional and riparian habitats. This raises doubt that the new reserves will function properly. The BLM plan is proposing a 5 to 8 year moratorium on spotted owl take until a barred owl control program is initiated in the planning area. Research on the effectiveness of barred owl removal has just begun, and uncertainty remains as to how much barred owl control the public will support over the long term. The northern spotted owl will benefit from the proposed moratorium on take, but its habitat is at greater risk over the long term because of extensive logging planned in late successional areas of the reserve, said Holmer. We advise placing a much longer moratorium on owl take. In about 30 years, a large amount of new suitable owl habitat will become available under the Northwest Forest Plan as forests mature. We need to stay the course and be as protective of the northern spotted owl as possible until then. The American Bird Conservancy is the Western Hemisphere's bird conservation specialist, the only organization with the single and steadfast commitment to achieving conservation results for native birds and their habitats throughout the Americas. With a focus on efficiency and working in partnership, we take on the toughest problems facing birds today, innovating and building on sound science to halt extinctions, protect habitats, eliminate threats, and build capacity for bird conservation. And if you'd like further information, go to www.abcbirds.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you want to listen to a rebroadcast, tune in tomorrow afternoon. That's Friday at 3 p.m. In Adams, North Adams, Massachusetts, listen to WMNB 107.1 FM Fridays at 5:30 in the morning. In Moscow, Idaho, listen to KRFP 90.3 FM Wednesdays at 3 p.m. In Dade County, Florida, listen to WLSL 92.7 on Sundays at noon. And on the Internet, listen to Grateful Dread Public Radio, gdprnashville.org. You can find them on tunein.com and spotify.com Sunday mornings at 2 a.m. And all those times are local times at the locations specified. You could also go to radioforall.net. That's radio for the number 4all.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio. It's produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week to another edition of the Earth First Update.